It's time for the Taking Notes Podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 104 of the Taking Notes Podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
And from Chicago, Illinois, we have
John Head,
who is the Director of Enterprise Collaboration at the PSC Group. And also, John is the Chairman of the IP Working Committee over at OpenNTF. So, John, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me again.
What do you think we're going to talk about today?
I think we should talk about Lotus Symphony.
Okay. It's your show. Go for it.
So Lotus Symphony is IBM Lotus's free productivity software based off of openoffice.org and includes software that allows you to edit documents, spreadsheets, and presentations, and comes free with Notes 8, 801, 85, 851, and is also available in a standalone mode.
So, John, Symphony came out in the fall of 2007, right?
Correct. And we've had the first major version that was 1.0 and three point releases. So we're up to version 1.3, and it now runs on all three platforms, Windows, Linux, and Mac OS X.
Yeah, and John, one of the reasons we asked you to talk about Symphony on the podcast is because as of 8.5.1, there's been a lot of changes for us developers to develop integration points with Notes. So before we get into those, can we take a step backward and talk about what we had prior to version 1.3 and go forward?
Sure. So there was two ways as a developer to take advantage of Symphony. The first was to create plugins for Symphony on top of the Eclipse and Expeditor platform, just like the sidebar apps and plugins that we build for the Notes rich client. But we also could do toolbars and menu bars as plugins. And that's written in Java, has its own extension points, and there's a toolkit for that. And we also got something called UNO, otherwise known as the Universal Network Objects API. And that was inherited from openoffice.org. And that was created many years ago to kind of be a bridge, so one interface for multiple languages. And so OpenOffice has Java, JavaScript, VB, Visual Basic, and other languages. So what you really had to do was take this UNO API and use it inside Lotus Script like you were talking to an OA or COM object, the same we would do it with Office or Word. But anybody who used it knew two things. Number one, it wasn't documented, and number two, it wasn't documented. So a lot of this was make it up, figure out it on in your own, steal samples from other people. I know, Julian, you have done a bunch of Symphony stuff in your sessions at Lotusphere, as have I, and this stuff is kind of like throwing magic dust up in the air.
Yeah, and really, my focus had been more on the spreadsheet than anything else. I didn't do anything with the documents or the presentation software, but you're right. I mean, it was definitely hard to find samples, especially compared to something like Office, which has been around for so long and has just so many millions of lines of code.
And the other thing is the API was modeled off of a Java C++ mentality. So you were taking Java classes and you were calling them and having to pass in empty arrays because they were required it. So for the average, the typical Notes developer who knows Lotus Script but may not know an advanced language, this was a huge hurdle to get over. So we still have that today, but since the release of 8.5.1, we actually have two native APIs for Symphony.
Okay, well, let's talk about those then, because I know that with the beta program, there was that was the toolkit was still separate, and now with 8.5.1, it's actually included with the client install, right?
Correct. So when you install 8.5.1, it installs the LSX that is the Symfony API. It provides a Lotus script and a Java API. And today it only runs on Windows and Linux. They are working on Mac support, but there's some issues with LSX on the Mac in general. So I'm hoping we'll see that sometime next year.
Right, and the documentation for it, I think the documentation didn't quite make the designer help yet, right? Isn't it still a separate PDF?
Well, and their goal is not to make it part of designer help or something that's built into the core objects, because that would mean they can only update it whenever the notes is updated. So they would have to be on the notes client release cycle. So that the way that they've done it is with an LSX and with Symfony running in the client and an external toolkit and documentation, if they want to release a new version in January, you just have to replace the LSX. So it has some of the advantages and disadvantages. With the 8.5.1 Domino Designer and Eclipse, you get type ahead because that's one of the things they added. So it feels integrated, even though it's not at the same level as the Notes APIs. What I love about it is it's modeled after the ideas of the Notes API. So if you've used Notes Session and Notes Document and UI Workspace and all of those classes, it feels like that. So there's a Symfony class and a Symfony Presentations and a presentations collection and a presentation document with slides. So, I mean, it feels like it fits. They did a great job. The order that they did them in is the Documents API is the most extensive. It allows you to do pretty much anything that you could do with the Uno API. The Spreadsheets API is what I would consider 80% of what I want, but it allows you to do the basics and import, export, and data pilots, which are pivot tables. And the presentations are very basic. You can basically open and save, but you can't do a lot of manipulation. But for a first 1.0 API, I am beyond pleased.
Yeah, and I guess where I was going with the documentation before was that, if you've installed 8.5.1, and you have that up and running, you can use the toolkit, but you're going to have to go elsewhere to find out how to actually use it. I think that you actually have to download the toolkit. Isn't that where it is?
Correct. It is part of the toolkit, which is up on Passport Advantage or whatever the site you get the software from. And it has some samples. It has a PDF file, but the LSX is in the core install, so you don't have to do that separately.
Right. And actually kind of a very subtle thing that it makes perfect sense, but you may not realize it, is that the LSX is not installed unless you install Symfony as part of your Notes client.
Correct, which I think for a lot of admins, they're pleased to hear that if they turn off Symfony, there's no Symfony footprint at all.
Right, but if you're kind of want to play around with the toolkit and you don't happen to have the Symfony installed in your client, then it's not going to be there.
Correct.
The LSX won't be.
Correct. And I think that's the one thing that I think a lot of people were shocked is this API, the new APIs, Lotus Script and Java, don't work with standalone Symfony. Right? They only work if you're using Symfony 1.3 inside the 8.5.1 client. So I think it's a lot of people expected them to focus on the standalone release, but we got this great API and it's opening a new window of applications that can be built.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of good and bad though, because on the one hand, sure, if you happen to have companies that decide to go the standalone route, then they're going to have different options. But on the other hand, I know that having played around with the Uno framework in the past, it got very to what might open when you were making your calls. If you had OpenOffice and Symfony and the embedded productivity editors all running or all installed on your machine at the same time, sometimes it was kind of a crapshoot as to what was going to open up when you create a new spreadsheet.
The joys of the registry in Windows.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I think what I've seen since this has come out is much more interest, because now people can add Symfony integration inside their applications, whether they're an ISV or a company just building their own, with a lot of ease. It's not a huge learning curve. So people who might have had a mail merge or an export button that went to Word and Excel, they can now add, you know, the same kinds of functionality in Symfony and not have to do a lot of work.
You know, one thing that probably we skipped over was, I want to hear, John, from your point of view about how strategically, you know, Lotus kind of came out of nowhere and offered an alternative to companies who may have not considered open office, right? Say they're a Microsoft, they're a Microsoft shop and they have Office installed, yet they're paying, right, big bucks for those enterprise agreements and those select agreements just to get, you know, all their people on the agreement. And, you know, for the most part, we all know that not everyone uses, you know, not everyone's a power user, right?
Right. Well, which I think is, you know, to start this discussion kind of on a funny note, most of us in the Lotus community still look back at the workplace era and we laugh. Well, one of the things we got from the workplace experiment is Symfony. So inside the workplace rich client, they had built some productivity editors, which then came down the line to become what Symfony is today. And what I like about Symfony is in the 1.3 release with the addition of data pilots, which is the non-copyrighted name for pivot tables, we got a tool that 80% of Office workers can use. There's still going to be people who want to use Microsoft Office or Keynote and the other apps on the Mac platform. I can see CFOs wanting the really high-end financial tools, and people like yourself who have Macs who want to use Keynote because it's kind of keeps with the elegance of the platform and the thought process. But for the majority of people on their work computers who are generating letters and doing some spreadsheet work and once in a while doing a presentation, Symfony provides that, and it does it pretty well. It's a perfect no. I think watching the Twitter stream of people writing sessions for Lotusphere show that it wasn't perfect, but it really solves that gap. And because it's free, it doesn't have the overhead that Office does today. So there's three ways that IBM kind of said, you know what, open office is there, people aren't using it, let's put our kind of might behind it. So they bundled it inside Notes. So they immediately put Symfony on the desk of, you know, millions and millions of users, possibly. They included support for Notes users. You know, so if you're a Notes customer, you on maintenance, you get Symfony support. And you can go buy support. So if you just want standalone, you want the product, you can call up IBM and Passport Advantage and get a support contract. And it is a fraction of the cost of you would if you were using Microsoft Office.
I didn't realize that the workplace editors morphed into Symfony.
Yep. So it was, they had three editors. They also had a project scheduler, which everybody wants to know where it went. So there were four editors in that rich client. So it's kind of funny that the time of Lotus that we all like to laugh about and be glad never came up, you know, kind of died, gave us the rich client for Notes and it gave us the editors for Symfony.
John, can you tell us about what you're seeing as far as, you know, adaptation in different countries and customers around the world?
The first thing I will say is Symfony is in far bigger use outside of the United States than it is inside. Much more open-minded, willing to try free software that isn't, you know, what everybody, quote, has on their machine, unquote. So Europe, Asia, South America, even in Africa, we're seeing a fairly large interest in Symfony. There's a bunch of companies that I know of that are in the 1,000 to 4,000 person range that have already moved to Symfony. I don't know of any major companies in the U.S. that have. IBM put out a press release with a couple. They were mostly in what we would consider the SMB space, but there is some enterprise interest outside the U.S. And I think that's just, you know, Microsoft is a U.S. company. U.S. like them. There's a lot of Microsoft sales reps who are in our offices every day. But I think the idea of paying, you know, $200, $300 a person for an editor and a spreadsheet is really starting to take a toll on people. And I think we're going to see that change over the next couple of years.
You know, maybe we could talk about some of the, you know, kind of business offshoots as well. I mean, Symfony isn't just, you know, the office tool and the integrated, you know, notes editors. I guess there's a third party market sort of developing around it too, right?
Yeah. And I think one of the things we're seeing is with OpenOffice, you know, there's the OpenOffice on a stick, right, where it lives on a memory stick. There's companies in Europe that install OpenOffice by default on, you know, Linux operating systems on laptops. And I think we're starting to see that kind of interest with Symfony. So we're going to see Symfony pre-installed on machines. It's not going to be the same numbers as Office, but we're starting to see more people who want to use Symfony inside their applications. They want to, you know, have OEM contracts because it's free. I mean, IBM, if you want an OEM contract, as long as you go through the legal hurdles, there isn't like you have to pay for it. So it becomes almost a set of building blocks you can build into your own application. Even better if your application is built on top of Eclipse, because then it's all reusable.
You know what? One thing that I notice a lot is those Java updates that are prompting people to install OpenOffice. Well, every time I get a call from someone about those, you know, I'll refer them to Symfony. So I think in a lot of ways, Sun doing that, you know, deliberately to get people to think about OpenOffice is actually, you know, good, you know, from the standpoint of things like Symfony and OpenOffice, because it's how else are they going to reach, you know, Joe's secretary and these line workers and so forth, other than a little pop-up coming in the lower right-hand side of their PC that says, hey, you know, consider OpenOffice. I don't know exactly what the message says, but I know it says, you know, something about wanting to install or try out OpenOffice. So
it's just like the install my software and oh, do you want the Google toolbar? With Java is install the Java software and oh, do you want OpenOffice? And I think the idea, because at the end of the day, they all came from the same source code, is that people want alternatives. And I think what 2009 for me was great is to see IBM really get involved with the OpenOffice community. So there was the OpenOffice conference in Orvieto, Italy this fall, and IBM had 10 speakers up there talking about not just Symfony, but the things that they were contributing back to OpenOffice. And the next version of Symfony is going to be using the current release of OpenOffice and its source code. And I think the interest in the community is starting to embrace the fact that there's a completely free version, right? Go to a website, click a button, it's installed on my machine. And there's a corporate version of that with support and all of the things that come with that. And depending on what your level of risk-taking or desires are, you have options. But at the end of the day, they create the same documents. And I think that's been a big big improvement in the movement of an Office alternative in 2009.
So you mentioned document formats. Can you give us a rundown of the file formats that Symfony can read and write, John?
Right. So by default, it reads open document format. So all three versions of that: documents, spreadsheets, and presentations. It reads the native open office formats that came before ODF. It reads Smart Suite, and it reads Office 97 through 2007. It also reads, you know, text files and XML and, you know, a whole bunch of generic formats. The only thing Symfony doesn't write to is the Office 2007 open Office XML, otherwise known as OOXML formats. So it reads those, so you can read them and do stuff. You can't save to that format yet.
All right. Well, you know, let's in terms of using these things, you know, we've kind of touched a little bit on using them, but I know that all three of us have been using Symfony maybe a little bit more than we normally would have with Lotusphere coming up, right? So maybe now is a good time to talk a little bit about some of the differences as far as, you know, really using Symfony versus using OpenOffice or using Keynote or PowerPoint or Office or anything like that. And I'll just kind of kick this off by saying that for my Lotusphere presentation, on my Mac, I actually did the entire both the presentation set slide sets on standalone Symfony. So I went just Symfony whole hog for my presentations. Was that your experiences also, guys?
Bruce here, and I'll fess up and say, you know, I'm a devout Keynote guy. So what I did is I took the template. I think I saved it to a PowerPoint, then opened it up in Keynote, did all my work in Keynote, saved it as a PowerPoint, opened it up in Symfony, and presto, everything was perfect. And that's the version you'll see on the Lotus Live site. John?
I actually took December to be a only use Office 2010 beta month, right? So everything I've been doing has been Office 2010. And so what I did is I took the ODF template we got from Lotus. I saved it as a PPT inside Symfony, worked entirely inside PowerPoint, and then opened that file back inside of Symfony and saved it as the ODP format that we needed to upload. And the fun thing about that is the Office 2010 format is not so different that Symfony couldn't read it. So I did not use Symfony for my presentation, just as kind of an experiment I've been running all month.
Right. Well, and I guess the whole point of that question or the kicking off the discussion like that is that I think that actually speaks to some of the flexibility in terms of using different Office products these days and how, you know, they really can integrate with each other. So, you know, you're not locked into an Office-only environment or, you know, some kind of Mac-only, oh, I've got to use Keynote sort of thing either, mm-hmm. Where you know, little by little, the file formats are, they're not, you know, becoming like each other, but the applications themselves, I guess, are becoming more compatible.
That's a really good point.
And what's funny is I'm very involved in the document format standards, not from the, you know, standard ISO kind of, but from the actual use of implementation, and have been out to both, you know, IBM and at Microsoft, and Microsoft's attitude has changed as well. I think they see the competition. They now, you know, Office 2007 Service Pack 2 now reads open document format and it saves to it. So for me, what I really like, and I think we're actually getting there, it was kind of a pipe dream 2 years ago, is you can use whatever tool you want. You should be able to open, edit, and save into any format you want and then share that. And I think we're 90% of the way there. And I think that last 10% will take us a while. But I think, you know, I think that is a really big progress, you know, huge leap that the whole space has taken.
Yeah, and I think that the big stranglehold that Microsoft Office had for the longest time was that, you know, there wasn't this compatibility between other products. And, you know, you pretty much had to use Office because if you didn't use Office, then other people would not be able to read your files or you wouldn't be able to read theirs. And you know, kind of they're losing that angle, whether they want to or not. So now we have this product embedded within the standard Notes client that can potentially, you know, go and read these attachments and things, not through key view like we always have in the Notes client, but through an actual editor where we can make changes and make modifications and send stuff back.
Yeah. Funny how Microsoft actually has to, you know, market OpenOffice on its features and functionality instead of lock-in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a good thing.
I'm going to throw this question at both of you. You know, all these cloud purveyors, right, like Google Docs and Microsoft and stuff like that. How, if at all, do apps integrate with those offerings, like, you know, line of business applications inside of companies?
I think what we're starting to see is a transition. So years and years, we had applications on multiple platforms that would integrate with Office. So if you were wanting to do charting, you would use Excel as your charting engine. And we've all done it in Notes where you had a button and it used COM to write data out to a spreadsheet. With 8.5.1, I can do the exact same integration that I was doing inside Office for years. And I think what's even cool and to me was the moment is for my Lotusphere session, every single one of my demos except one I've written in for Office and for OpenOffice Symphony. They're the exact same. They do the exact same. I mean, the code is different, of course, but there's only one of them I couldn't do, and that was an advanced PowerPoint demo. And that's the first time I've ever been able to do that. So I think the line of business apps, this kind of stuff is getting integrated more. We're starting to see people take these document formats more serious. We're doing quite a bit of work with the formats where we don't even use the editors. We're just doing the raw format editing on a server. So for somebody who's made this their area of business for the past 10 years, the past 18 months have been the fastest growing and probably the busiest that I've seen.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the business partner opportunities that are here. I mean, certainly your company has been working with Symphony and as well as Office, right? I mean, to be fair, you guys kind of play the entire field, right?
Correct. We're a pure services organization, so our job is to go in and help people implement, you know, migrate to Symphony if they're using Office and to integrate applications. And you're seeing some of that. The biggest movement in the Symphony business partner arena is in the ISV space. You have folks like Integra with the Integra for Notes software, which now does the reporting and the document creation as well for Symphony as it does for Office. I'm a big fan of their software, and if you don't want to do all of the grunt work yourself, their product is amazing. You've got a company out there called Indelient who's got a tool that mass migrates documents from, you know, the Microsoft formats to Symphony, and they have an engine that does that. Their stuff is great. There's a Smart Draw has done integration from their software into Symphony, and they basically have a plugin that sits on top of the Expeditor framework, so you can import Smart Draw objects to any of the Symphony applications. Their stuff is great. And then there's Pavone and Conical and Acuity. They've all done work with Symphony as well. I think we're starting to see it pick up. 12 months ago, I was myself and one, you know, two people here on the edges where were interested. Now we're starting to see a lot of people who are interested in Symphony.
Now, how about plugins? To be honest, I have not played around with the plugin market for Symphony at all. Is that growing?
It is. Two reasons. Number one, we've been talking about the LotusScript API that came in 8.5.1, but they also added a Java API. And that API, it is wonderful, but it works inside all the plugins. So myself and a couple of the folks at PSC and Paul Bastide from IBM, we actually wrote a plugin that allows you to do insert graphics, but these graphics, instead of stored on your hard drive, are stored in an NSF. And that's using the new API and the plugin model. IBM put up a plugins page on the Symfony webpage, symfony.otis.com. Click the plugins link, and there's a whole bunch of plugins. I just saw one lately from somebody who, it's called Notes of a Symfony, and it's supposed to let end users import and export data from Notes to Symfony, and it's very, very polished. So I think the plugin space will take off. It's not as easy or as slick as installing Visual Studio, you know, clicking Visual Studio Tools for Office and adding a ribbon. But it's very powerful, and it's now fully documented. So if you're in Notes and you want to drag and drop stuff from a Notes document or a view into a Symfony window, you can do that with the API now.
Well, you know, since we're kind of edging towards the future visions, you know, kind of directions of Symfony and things like that, I think that's probably a good segue to Lotusphere.
Yep.
And, you know, what do we think, you know, keeping in mind all of our respective NDAs, you know, what are we allowed to think is going to happen at Lotusphere this year with Symfony?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer that everybody is expecting the next version of Symfony to be announced. There is a couple code names I've heard, Symfony 2.0. I expect we'll see that on the main stage. The things that IBM have been talking about publicly is rebuilt on top of the current OpenOffice code base, support for writing Office 2007 formats, and more enhancements to both the user interface and performance. It would not shock me if we also don't see some major work in the templates. So the way that you store templates and roll them out. So I think that's going to be, you know, if I was a betting person and I don't gamble, I'd bet lots of money that that's going to be something that they show at Lotusphere.
Yeah, because it's not so easy right now to import a new template into Symfony, say, for the presentations, if I remember correctly. I remember reading something in a chat somewhere, Julian. I don't know if those were your instructions, but it wasn't that easy.
It's even worse. You can't go to an existing presentation and say, replace the template with this one like you can in PowerPoint and Keynote. So they've got work to do there. They've heard that many times. My guess is they're going to solve some of those pain points.
And my guess, too, is that Daniel Neshed is going to have it running on the Xbox as well.
Hey, why not?
PS3.
Yeah, the PS3. All right, so resources, John, available for people out there wanting to explore Symfony some more. Where would they go?
Well, the symfony.lotus.com, that's the center of Symfony. Not only are there plugins, there's a gallery of templates. There are the forums, the community forums, which are great. There's my website, johndavidhead.com, and if you click on the Symfony Thursday category link, you'll get a listing of about 40 blog entries that talk about Symfony, everything from the executive decision to end user content and quite a bit of developer content as well. We've also started doing videos, the first one being for this plugin we built, and youtube.com/johndavidhead is my channel on YouTube. And there's actually quite a bit going on about Symfony at Lotusphere. So I know of 6 sessions. 2 of those are mine. The first one is Jumpstart 106, which is called Kumbaya meets Let's Kick Butt. This is our integration jumpstart I do with my partner in crime, Alex Kasaboff, every year. And that is on Sunday afternoon. And then on Wednesday, I am doing BP214, IBM Lotus Symfony, finally a developer's friend, and that's going to be quite a bit about the new APIs. But IBM has a bunch of sessions. ID612, Lotus Symfony Overview and Update. ID613, One Smart Move, Making the Transition to Lotus Symfony. AD207, Lotus Symphony Technical Overview, AD208, Lotus Symphony Toolkit and Programmability. And there's actually three labs this year. So there's a Lotus Symphony Developers Lab, and there's going to be a kiosk in the Developers Lab and the Ask the Experts Lab, and then there's a pedestal on the exhibit floor. So there's going to be a lot of Symphony around at Lotus Fair this year.
What about you, Julian? You didn't answer.
I didn't answer about what sessions are going to be.
No, I'm sorry. You didn't. We didn't get your crystal ball prediction.
Ball. Well, you know, I kind of like John said, I think the slam dunk is probably the fact that they haven't had a new version of Symphony since June or something like that. You know, we're still on 1.3. You know, I would love to see some announcements around the updatability of the Notes client, and in terms of updating Symphony outside of the normal Notes client update process. But I have no idea if that's something that's on the table right now or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, they fixed that for same time 8.5. You can now install on top. So I believe 8.5, as long as you're at 8.5.1, the next version of Symphony will be able to install on top of the client.
So you could slip it in without doing a total Notes upgrade.
Or waiting for the next, the next client release.
Right. Good.
So I think if you wanted me to think a little bit farther out, you know, we're going to see something with Symphony and online. Just, you know, there's been some strange happenings with Lotusphere sessions disappearing, and I think we're going to see Lotus and IBM kind of do something that we don't expect them to.
All right. Julian, any other Symphony questions for Mr. Head?
No, I asked everything I could think of, Bruce.
All right. Well, John, thanks for returning back to the Taking Notes podcast. I have some of your sessions penciled in because I think personally Symphony offers a tremendous value proposition for a lot of shops out there. And again, I'm trying to. Thanks, dogs, for barking. Outside of the United States, personally, in the El Guji world, most of the customers are outside the United States, and a lot of them that we've queried are running Symphony. So it's very interesting. So that's all I have.
Well, I just want to say thank you, guys. Always a pleasure, and Happy New Year's to everybody out there listening. And see you at Lotusphere in under 3 weeks.
Yep,
I can't believe it. So that's a wrap for episode 104. And thanks again for listening, and Happy New Year, everybody. Giddy up, Julian.
Giddy up.